The Gulf oil leak keeps costing BP.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico has so far cost the British oil giant more than $3 billion. Now, that includes the cost of containing the spill and cleaning up the oil. It also reflects the cost of drilling relief wells and compensating those affected by the spill. On top of that, another embarrassing admission from BP regarding safety. For the latest now, we're going to bring in Marketplace's Stephen Beard, who's with us live from London with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
What's this about safety? What's the company confessed to?
That it didn't follow a standard British procedure on the Macondo well. It did not write up a lengthy assessment of the safety issues around the project before it began. This practice became standard in Britain after a major blowout disaster in the North Sea in the 1980s. Shell says that it always produces a so-called safety case when it drills for oil or gas anywhere in the world. BP admits that it hasn't done this on any of its U.S. wells because so far it hasn't been required to do so.
And what's the latest on how this disaster has affected BP, Stephen?
Oh, it's devastated the company. The share price has more than halved. It's now widely thought to be a potential takeover target. In fact, there were various reports here at the weekend that BP is looking for a so-called white knight, a strategic investor, to take a stake to fend off an unwanted bid. Nick McGregor, an oil analyst with brokers Redmayne Bentley, says BP should be able to find a white knight.
The real issue is at what price it will attract a strategic investor. As we saw with the banks during the credit crunch, there is money out there, but it comes at a fair price when you're in trouble and your back's against the wall.
So BP may not get much for the stake that it sells. Among the potential predators thought likely to stalk BP, two have been mentioned, ExxonMobil and PetroChina.
All right, Marketplace's Stephen Beard joining us from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
All right, how are overseas stocks doing now? Well, European shares are slightly lower at the moment, mainly under a quarter of a percent. Asian markets closed mixed today. Wall Street Friday, the S&P and NASDAQ lost about half a percent. The Dow Industrial shed about the same, 46 points to close at 96.86. It was the second straight losing week for stocks. Markets were down between 5 and 6% last week. The latest movie in the Twilight series grabbed top honors at the box office over the long holiday weekend. It took in about $69 million in North America alone. Advertisers knew the movie would do well and ponied up for product placement. Now, given the movie's target audience, shots of Burger King make sense. But what's Volvo doing in there? April Dembosky has the story.
Volvo has built its reputation on safety and sensibility. The name conjures images of soccer moms and station wagons, not tween girls who don't even have their license yet. But it was Twilight author Stephanie Meyer who put her lead vampire behind the wheel of a Volvo, so the company seized on the marketing opportunity when the book became a movie. Now it's trying to appeal to teens and their so-called twi moms.
Our car is much more than just safety.
Linda Gangieri is a Volvo spokeswoman.
And it really is about this idea of being perceived as a cool, attractive brand.
Stanford marketing professor Jennifer Auker says Volvo's cameo in the Twilight series should help it achieve the kind of cachet all companies want.
One is to be a little bit more exciting, and the second is to have a better stronghold on a younger consumer base.
Vampires, werewolves, and hordes of squealing 12-year-old girls should help do it. I'm April Dembosky for Marketplace. Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, offering the ability to manage money, credit, and loans all in one place. LendingTree.com.
From Cape Cod to the wilds of Alaska, the National Park Service is responsible for preserving more than 80 million acres of scenic beauty across our country. And as Gigi Duban reports from the Great Smoky Mountains in Tennessee, the job of park ranger is highly sought after these days.
Take me to the prettiest place in the park. Show me the best waterfall. Those are questions Carrie Jones gets asked dozens of times every day at Great Smoky Mountains National Park. The other question he hears all the time?
How do I get a job here? How do I get a job in environmental education or in the wildlife or helping the environment? Yeah, I hear that a lot. There's a lot more of that than it was, say, 10 years ago, I think.
Jones is a park ranger. He retired, then recently returned as a seasonal employee. As a ranger, he gets paid to hike through the woods, show people where salamanders hide, point out the difference between a black-capped chickadee and a Carolina chickadee. not a bad gig. Jobs with the National Park Service have always been competitive, but recently the government agency has been flooded with applicants. In the Washington office alone, they're getting four times the number of applications than they did just a few years ago. One of those hopefuls is Jenny Bradbury. Bradbury is 25. She works at a real estate office renting cabins in nearby Gatlinburg. On her days off, she'd volunteer at the park.
It was really fun and rewarding for me. I feel like I learned a lot about the park and did some good networking.
It paid off. Bradbury just landed a job as a forestry technician with the Park Service. She has a degree in wildlife ecology, so for her, spraying plants and treating infested trees is exciting stuff. Her job is seasonal, so she won't have health insurance, and it pays just $15 an hour, but she says it's worth it.
You can make a difference, and it's nice to be outside and hike. I'm sure it'll be a lot of hard work, but probably rewarding work.
And for young people, rewarding work is what it's about, says Ryan Paugh. He's co-founder of BrazenCareerist.com.
They want a work life that sort of enhances their personal life, and they're willing to take a lower salary because of that.
For Jones and Bradbury, 6 months of seasonal work is still work. And when that's up, they'll both be competing for another stint with the Park Service. In the Great Smoky Mountains, I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
And finally, earlier this year, Chad Etmuller walked into a Georgia sandwich shop, ordered a double five-meat special with cheese. When he tried to eat it, his jaw temporarily locked up. Well, instead of suing, AOL reports he went back to the store and wanted a free sandwich to replace the one he couldn't eat. The sandwich chain called Witch Witch gave him the sandwich and renamed it the Lockjaw. The company says because of the notoriety from the incident, it's expanding its presence in Georgia, opening more stores there. Etmuller says he may even open his own franchise, and he plans to attend the company's annual convention in Texas. Not bad for biting off more than he could chew. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.